Thank you for being here today for this particular meeting. I'd like to welcome the officials from DHET. Thank you for being here today. And I'd like to table an apology from the Minister Mania. Today's agenda, we will be receiving a briefing from Time Bank. And I would like to welcome the representative from African Bank as well as the Time Bank CEO as well. They will be doing a briefing for us on overview on their products and services offers, the strategy for assisting small and medium businesses to grow, innovation in the sector, and views on the way forward for the banking industry. Just a bit of background. In finance, one of the questions I had for myself was, what do we do in the finance sector for it to be more innovative and to assist the residents of the Western Cape? And similar how in the beginning people were a bit confused about how Uber have a car industry without any cars, similar to Airbnb when they disrupted with a home industry without any property, I was fascinated by Time Bank that launched and they have no branches. And then we took it about ourselves and I was like, let us invite Time Bank and find out if they would like to come chat to us. Because Time Bank is a private institution and not directly responsible to the provincial parliament. So I would like to thank Time Bank for being here today, for being willing to chat to us about the banking industry and about innovative finance. I think the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, it's a huge step for us as a committee, and I think that in future that we need to engage more with the private industry as well as to what our respective mutual benefits could be. I'm first going to allow the members to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to allow the officials as well as the representatives to introduce themselves. And if there's anyone from the public, I'll allow you to also just read your name and your name and surname into the record. And then we will jump right into the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Andrikus van der Vestijs. And you said Uber is a transport company without cars, and Airbnb is an accommodation institution without rooms. I was thinking that you might say Time Bank is a bank without money. Grateful that you said that. They're only lacking in branches. Thank you.
Good morning, Tamara. Ricardo McKenzie.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Dyer from the Department of Economic Services.
Welcome.
Good morning, I'm Denise from PMG.
Good mic.
Denise Mathis from PMG.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ames Nimwes. I'm from African Rainbow Capital. I'm an executive there, and we are the majority shareholder in Time Bank. So I'm just joining the CEO. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tariq. I'm part of the Time Bank team.
The participants at the back, can you just read your names into the record for us, please?
Good morning, I'm Lucky, DA Research.
Thank you. CEO, I'm not sure if you demoted yourself. I see on this presentation you're a team member, and the previous one you were CEO. But I think you can jump right into the presentation, and then I'll open up for question and answer session.
Madam Chair, thank you, and honourable members of the committee. As much as we are here to share, you know, and I always tell my staff this, we very much as Time Bank venturing into new ground. You know, we are in the business, I keep saying, actually not of digital banking. We're actually in the business of financial inclusion, and we use digital banking as a mechanism of facilitating financial inclusion to ordinary South Africans because of the obvious benefits that it brings. You know, so again, as much as we are here to share, we are also here to learn and to draw on the collective wisdom of the committee. it's important for the country, I believe, that we democratize financial services and particularly banking. But it's not a straight line, the journey to that. It's a continuous journey, and so we are always in the process of uncovering the truth. And so I often tell staff that one needs to be extremely collaborative and open-minded and receptive to ideas and collective wisdom as we go on the journey. So thank you again for the opportunity. We've got a little presentation prepared. I also had a video prepared, but unfortunately it's not rendering off my iPad, so apologies for that. I guess I'll start from me personally. This is probably my 10th year sort of centrally involved in the cause of financial inclusion in our country. I started 12 years ago. For my sins, I was in professional services, and I was advising intimately one of the big banks that was responding to the financial services charter's cry to make banking more accessible and affordable to South Africans. And they had realized at the time that in order to do that, it cannot be a philanthropic or CSI approach. You have to make that commercially viable so that you can sustainably be on that journey. And in doing that, we had realized that that we would need a different business model, perhaps one that actually does not closely mimic that of a banking business model. So that's really where the journey started, and then this is my third scaled digital banking financial inclusion deployment in South Africa. I've been in two before, and it will be interesting if the committee's at all interested. We can unpack sort of why certain of these things don't work. So with that in mind, I'll start the presentation. So as I said, this is actually our business's purpose, and it hasn't changed fundamentally since we actually started the business some 7 years ago. We started the business as a fintech, actually not as a regulated accountable institution, where we built and ran mobile money for MTN. That's a while ago now. But even since those days, this purpose hasn't changed. So we are in the business of empowering people to reach their full human potential by democratizing banking services. So making banking services affordable, accessible, and dignified to ordinary South Africans. And as I've mentioned, digital banking is the vessel that we've chosen for achieving that at scale. So the question we always ask ourselves is, what has been preventing ordinary South Africans from getting affordable and dignified access to financial services in the country? And it comes down to one thing, and that's access. And the way we think about access is around three pillars. We think about that middle pillar over there, which is financial access. And that's really about affordability in essence. And then we think about physical access, and we think about emotional access. Emotional access is actually inextricably linked to trust. Now, when we sat back and we looked at the banking, the established banking sector in South Africa, we said that banking services in this country has now for too long been too expensive, inconvenient to use, and for the most part opaque and complex, which actually breeds mistrust. And then we went about sort of creating differentiation of each of those categories to lower those barriers to entry. So on financial access, if you look at the proposition that we've gone to market with now, we're currently in market with a very simple transactional banking account and a savings account. Obviously, there's a debit card linked to that. Now, that transactional banking account is the lowest cost in market by some way, and I've got a slide in there later that compares us to others. Now, it's not just a matter of being low, of charging customers low fees. It's actually you gotta afford to do that, right? As a commercial venture, and you've gotta have a very low cost base in order to do that sustainably. So the way we've constructed our cost base is a couple of things. The one is we have a low cost technology stack. Typically, banks invest a significant amount each and every year in the upkeep, maintenance, and security of their banking infrastructure. And we have to do the same, but it's significantly lower cost for us to do that because we are hosted in the cloud, and we also use software as a service extensively. So we don't cobble together, or rather we don't build each and every individual building block ourselves. You know, we partner with other organizations that have those building blocks, that are world class at running those building blocks, like Amazon Web Services, for example. And we basically write pieces of code to connect those building blocks. So that's probably the one big driver of us being low cost. The other big driver of us being low cost is the fact that we have a partnership model. So again, you know, we don't own any branch infrastructure. We partner with other organizations that are better situated to the customer than we are in order to get access to the customer. So for example, our partner now is Pick n Pay, who brings us the Pick n Pay branded retail footprint, and also the Boxer footprint, which I'll talk about in a little more detail later. That's an extensive footprint that we leverage, but we're able to do things at ultra low cost in doing so. And then there are a couple of other things on the cost base, but we can explore that later if the committee is interested. So for example, we are a very small organization, you know, because we digitize things, we automate things, we don't have thousands of people in our back office. Then the second thing is we provide an extremely competitive interest rate on our savings account. And in fact, for a product that is as liquid, I cannot think of another product in market that is anywhere near to that rate. So once a customer has kept the money in the savings account for longer than 90 days, she earns, and gives 10 days notice, she earns 10% interest on an annual basis. There are also no penalties, there are also no minimum deposits, minimum balances. The one thing I didn't point out here, that it's not only about low cost, it's also about giving value back to the customer. So as a digital bank, and Madam Chair, you spoke about, you mentioned this platform in your introduction, you know, we are a digital platform, fully regulated obviously as a retail commercial bank. But one of the benefits of being a digital platform and having the technology is you are able to integrate into different product sets that are not necessarily your own. So what we did is we integrated into Pick n Pay Smart Shopper program, which is one of the largest loyalty programs in South Africa, very well regarded, has great affinity with customers. And what we do there is, we offer customers double Smart Shopper points when they swipe their time card.
Well, now I'm sold.
we also offer customers Smart Shopper points for the first time outside of Pick n Pay points. So if a customer swipes their card outside of Pick n Pay stores, they'll earn a Smart Shopper point as they would ordinarily by swiping their blue card inside Pick n Pay stores. So that's about giving value back to the customer. That's our credit card. You know, it's amazing how, you know, particularly if you've been at something for a long time and you're incredibly passionate about something, how you bring your own biases into the present. And one of the biases that I brought in, you know, is that before we launched, I didn't like the color of this card. You know, it's yellow and it's a bit ugly, to me at least at the time.
You like blue.
You know, it just shows how one's consciousness gets, evolves with time without you knowing, you know, because you see black cards and, you know, grey cards and so on. But customers actually love, by and large, this color, because it stands out and it's very prominent and it's very different to the rest of the market. Anyway, that's a by the by. So, if I can speak a little bit about physical access, and I've got some slides later on this as well. Let me start by positioning why physical access is so important, because you might be thinking, but you're a digital bank, why is physical access important? The one thing I've learned over the years is that digital only in the country will put you into a niche market. So it will put you either into something like the millennials or the affluent. And the reasons for that are actually quite obvious. You know, digital literacy, although improving in the country, are still not at levels of developed economies. The proliferation of devices that can accommodate apps, so in other words smartphones, are on the rise but are still not anywhere near ubiquitous in the country. And then the cost of data, even though it has been declining, are still incredibly high when compared to any developing or developed economy. So there are some real impediments there, and we have learned that physical contact with the customer is absolutely critical. That doesn't mean you need branches of your own. Okay. So, and there are two reasons for this. Is the one is you need to onboard the customer, and you need to do so in a fully compliant manner. Now we do onboard customers through our website as well, but those accounts are limited in their functionality. We can get into that later if it's of interest. But the vast majority, 85% of our customers, are onboarded at our kiosk, which we have in 750 Pick n Pay and Boxer stores. And there's two reasons for that. The one is that the kiosk is where you get your debit card. And the debit card in this country is still critically important, because P2P mobile payments are still a while away, in my view. You know, we're still a very cash-dominant society. So to expect customers to jump from cash to P2P is a bridge too far. You need something in the middle, which is the debit card. The second reason is that It's that comfort and familiarity and legitimacy that is brought about with customers by having some sort of a retail presence, some face-to-face, something that is branded, that is tangible, particularly as a new entrant. So that's the one part. It's really about digital onboarding of a customer. The second piece is about being able to facilitate deposits and withdrawals in a in as near ubiquitous fashion as possible, but also at incredibly low cost. So our customers can use their debit card and withdraw cash at any ATM. We don't have an ATM network of our own. And so when customers do that, they pay a rate through SAP, because we have a sassage fee associated with that. But that's by far the secondary means of getting money out. The primary means of getting money in and out of your account are at the Pick n Pay and Boxer toll points. And again, I'll talk about this in more detail in a little bit, but what I will say now is that because we are leveraging an existing cash handling capability, you know, retailers have been doing this for time immemorial, we are able to facilitate those transactions at incredibly low cost. So by way of example, our customers can put up to 5,000 Rand or allowed to put up to 5,000 Rand at a time at the toll point into the account, and we charge 4 Rand for that transaction. You know, the next lowest cost fee in the market, my understanding is, I stand under correction, is at 5,000 Rand is 50 Rand. So you're talking about an order of magnitude lower, you know, more than 10 times lower cost. And again, the reason we can do that is because we are using an existing cash handling capability. So that's critically important. Over 60% of all retail transactions in our country are still in cash, by volume, not by value. Okay. And then emotional access, or what we think of as trust. There's two things here. The one is that the banking sector has been notorious for complexity, and complexity in how they communicate to customers, complexity in terms of how the products are priced. And that complexity creates opaqueness, and opaqueness, in my view, the lack of transparency breeds mistrust. So what we've done with our product is we've got a very simple pricing structure, for example. We on the transactional account, a customer pays one of four options per, there's no monthly fee, okay, there's no minimum deposits, none of that stuff. And then the customer pays as she goes. Most of the transactions are 3 or 2 Rand, and some of them are 4 or 8 Rand. That's what we have. It's 0, 2, 4 or 8. There's no decimal points, there's no ad valorem, there's no 4 Rand 98 plus 2.15% of every 1,000 Rand thereafter. There isn't 1,000 options. We don't have 40 transactional banking products, we've got one product. And that's not because we want to be cute, you know, that is because it's in the customer's best interest. So that's the first way of building trust. The second way, as a digital bank that is pursuing the cause of democratizing banking, is having a human touch. And that means being human in the way you design your products, you know, make them customer friendly, but also being human in how you engage with customers. And in fact, what we've done here is we have actually staffed now as all the Pick n Pay and Boxer stores where we have a kiosk, they also have an ambassador, and I'll talk about the ambassador a little bit more later, because it's an important cog in our wheel. But the role of the ambassador, by the way, the ambassador is not there all the time every day, because there are shifts and there are unattended times, but for the most part, they certainly in the busy times, they help customers onboard. So for those customers that are not comfortable with our digital onboarding process, they help customers in that regard. They're also there to provide and explain the products to customers. So those ambassadors are absolutely are absolutely critical. And then, Madam Chair, what I would say just briefly on lending is that we have about 23 million active credit customers in our country, and in my estimation, 7.5, 8.5, 9 million of those customers are what one would call thin file. So in other words, they don't have an extensive history, track record with credit bureaus. Now what happens is, if you are credit vetting a customer and there's insufficient information on a customer, it's very difficult for somebody to take the depositor's money and to lend it out responsibly. So we have taken a view that in order to not only lend responsibly but more broadly into society, you know, and create sort of broader responsible access to credit, we have to go beyond the normal means of credit vetting. And what are the normal means of credit vetting? By and large, it's bureau data and what credit providers call banking data. So in other words, transactional data. You can see patterns. You can see where people are spending money, how much money they spend, when they spend, so on and so forth. And while that can get you far, that's not going to get you a position of financial inclusion. So what we've done is we have an exclusive arrangement with Pick n Pay to use the Smart Shopper data for the purposes of credit scoring and lending. Now that allows us to see into the basket of a customer and into customer segments. Obviously one needs consent and so on, which we have. But it holds interesting prospects for lending because I can see these sort of purchasing patterns and I can use that to develop what we call lending basket data attributes and build an alternative scorecard to be able to lend to customers that would perhaps otherwise not qualify. Over time we will augment it with other forms of data like phone app data if the customer has a smartphone and so on. Okay. So I thought it would be useful just to show what we call our Time Bank Canvas. Effectively what this attempts to do is very simplistically convey who our target segments are, what our products are, and what are the channels we use to get those products to customers. And I guess the first thing that will strike you is that there's not an awful lot on this page. There's very little on this page, right, for a full retail commercial bank. And that's very deliberate. So it's as important what you don't see on the page as what you see on the page. Now, one of the reasons for this is that the more product lines you get involved in, invariably the more complexity you create in the background and the more cost you create. And what banks are again notorious of doing is to pass a lot of that cost onto the consumer. So we've had to make a bold call a long time ago, quite frankly, that we will not be getting into the proliferation of products. We will manufacture a very limited set of products, and where it makes sense and is in the customer's best interest, we will partner with other organizations to make their products available to our customer base. So we have two target segments. The one is the underserviced consumer on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side we have small businesses. Our underserviced consumer we will target with a personal account, which is what we call our everyday account. We're in market with that. Our savings account, which is what we call GoalSave, we're in market with that as well. You get it actually the same time as what you do your checking account. And an unsecured term loan, which we've just recently gone to market with. We've been piloting that very gently below the line. And then you see that icon, the third-party products, that was what I was referring to when, you know, if it's in the customer's best interest to have affordable life insurance, perhaps with a wealth pocket, savings pocket, we will partner with another organization to make it available. We certainly won't be getting into that ourselves as a manufacturer. Then on the small business side, we have almost a replication of what we have on the consumer side. So a business account, which also has a savings account attached to it. We will be going live to the market before the year is out with that offering. We've already developed that business account. It is being piloted with a small number of customers that have pre-registered. And that's working well. But then we will also be getting into a point of sale device strategy, which will allow small businesses to accept payments electronically, and over time do other things, which I'll talk about in more detail, sort of value-added services. And then on the lending side, in the foreseeable future, we will only do two loans. The one is actually a cash advance, a merchant cash advance, and I'll explain that in a little bit more detail later. The second one is a working capital loan, which we will done in a fully digital fashion, off the back of supply chain information that we hope to see. And then on our channels, it's very simple. We have a smart app, an internet banking website, which is responsive. You can use it on any device. It's fully reactive, so you know it responds depending on which device you are using. Both of those channels are zero rated, so in other words, they don't consume data when you are using those channels, except for one telco, which we are really, it's one of the smaller telcos we're battling to zero right off the back of them, but it's not affecting a lot of our customers yet. So we are still working on that. We also have a call center. I see the slide is referencing a chatbot. That chatbot, I just need to be clear, is actually not embedded into our banking app. It's in a standalone app, which is called Time Coach, which is something totally different. It's a financial education tool. Again, happy to elaborate on that. But over time, we will need to embed the chatbot into our banking app. We also have a call center for obvious reasons. I've spoken a bit about our kiosk. I've spoken about the till point. I've mentioned the ambassadors, and I've mentioned the time pause device. So what the slide does, and I mean, obviously full pricing available if needed. It just stacks us up against some of our competitors. It in terms of the cost of our everyday account, which is our transactional bank account. Now, on the right-hand side is the cost that a customer will incur to perform those two basket of transactions. Those are 12 transactions and a 17 transaction basket on predefined transaction types. And that is defined by the Solidarity Union, which, quite frankly, I consider the yardstick at this. They publish an annual report that compares banking fees. You know, our customers, for a light basket of transactions, if you look at 12 transaction basket, for example, would pay 12 rand, you know, of course depending now, but again, you know, these transactions are set in this analysis, and that is significantly lower than the next lowest cost in market. And then similarly on the 17 transaction basket, we are significantly lower cost. Now, you know, one could do some analysis here saying, well, you know, if those basket of transactions look slightly differently, you know, that gap might widen if you compare us to some of the higher cost banks in the market where certainly most of our people bank. You know, you're talking about savings, what's that, 30 rand times 400 rand a year. Now that might not seem like a lot of money, but for most of our people, you know, that is, you know, school uniforms and stationery, or might even affect the school you send your child to. So it's material. And on the left hand side, I'm not going to go into a great amount of detail there. That is just our banking charges per transaction type, and again, full pricing available. Sorry, this was intended, Madam Chair, to be a video. Actually, it's a real shoot of one of our customers. You know, we did a 60-second shot of our customer and what GoalSafe means to him in his life. But I've got it on my iPad, and maybe later I can share it, but unable to project it now. Sorry about that. Okay, so I think it's worthwhile talking about in a little bit more detail of how we onboard customers, particularly at our kiosk, where 85% of our existing base is onboarded. So that's an image, obviously, of our kiosk, which is currently in about 750 pick and pay and boxer stores. What happens is, you know, picture a customer going into a boxer store to buy some groceries, milk, cheese, whatever the case may be, and either walks up to this kiosk, speaks to one of the boxer staff, or gets approached by our ambassador, or heard about it on social media, whatever the case may be. Now, what the customer does is she simply puts her fingerprints onto the kiosk as a biometric reader. We are integrated with Harness Department of Home Affairs biometric database. We run an algorithm in the background that measures the level of match between the fingerprint and the repository. If there is a substantially high probability of a match, that customer will get a green alert. The customer obviously doesn't see this, it all happens in the background. And is then eligible for our full level account, which is virtually an unencumbered account, or will become an unencumbered account. If there's a poor match, the process will flag it as a red alert, and the customer will still get a bank account, but will fall into another process, which is a multiple choice question. The customer has to answer those questions, or some of those questions, correctly. And if she does that, she will get the lowest limited account. So it's still get a bank account, but the daily and the monthly limits are lower. Now the reason for this is because we are a digital bank, we enable quick paperless onboarding, and we are using the risk-based approach of the FICA Amendment Act of 2017, which means that it is up to each accountable institution for themselves to identify the risk through the KYC process and to manage the risk as they feel is fit. However, if you get audited and you're deemed not to have proper controls, you are in significant trouble. There are other tests we also run in the background as that process happens. So, for example, we will take the customer's credentials and check it against various databases, numerous amount of databases, including South African Fraud Prevention Services, WorldCheck, Thomson Reuters, and so on, to look for known perpetrators of fraud, money laundering, counter-terrorist financing, and other forms of financial crime. And then the long thing is, which is a bit technical in nature, is we run a financial crime algorithm on each and every customer. But the net effect of this is that in just 5 minutes, the customer walks away with a transactional bank account. It's immediately linked with a savings account and a personalized debit card with their name printed on here. So you can see Ainsley's name is printed on this card. And that all happens in a digital fashion. This slide, not as similar to the pricing slide, and apologies, Madam Chair, this slide is a little bit dated now, but I'll speak through the differences. This slide basically compares our distribution channel to some of the big players in South Africa, because, you know, Madam Chair, may I stand up for a while, or would you not be able to get into the
stand
record?
Up,
is that okay?
Down.
Thank you. I just
if you speak into the record,
yeah.
I'm happy.
Okay, thank you. So, so what we have here is we compare the distribution network on those two metrics I explained earlier. So you've got onboarding, and you've got deposits and withdrawals. Now, unlike, you know, the conventional banks who onboard customers largely through their banking infrastructure, their branch infrastructure, apologies, you know, they've got some relationship managers, but by and large they are onboarding customers in the branch. You know, we onboard customers at these kiosks in these shops, so it's about 750 now, but doesn't matter, substantially still the same. And you see, when you compare us to the big players, you know, that is a substantial network, onboarding network. And by the way, this is only through one partner. This is only through the Pick n Pay and Boxer relationship. As we partner with other organizations, this network will expand substantially, in my view. So when you consider deposits and withdrawals, the big banks, you can see their numbers there. One of them has a significant ATM network, as we, and a significant branch network, actually, for that matter, as we know. Now, we facilitate these deposits and withdrawals at 14,000 till points across all formats of Pick n Pay and Boxer. The kiosks are only in the grocery store formats, but we are integrated into Pick n Pay and Boxer's till points, and so we facilitate withdrawals and deposits in all formats, including the warehouse formats, the clothing formats, the punch formats with Boxer, and so on. And we're probably in 1,500 unique destinations. So again, if you compare, you know, the top points and the unique destinations, I would say our footprint is incredibly comparable. Probably superior on cash in, because the big banks can only do cash in at their branches and at automatic, some ATMs that do automatic note acceptance, whereas we can do cash in each and every unique destination. And then if you look at our headcount, and apologies again, these numbers are a bit dated, but effectively what we have is about 750 ambassadors. I'll get to it in a minute. Those are outsourced, so they're not on our payroll, but still we see them as very much as part of the family. And we have less than, I don't know, call it, you know, we actually don't look at fixed headcount alone. We look at our contractors as well. Point is that we weigh under 200 people on a hybrid model. The point I'm trying to make is that, you know, we are running a million customer base nearly already on a headcount that is substantially, materially, orders of magnitude lower than the big banks, and that is because of our operating model and the fact that we are a digital bank. So I thought it would be worthwhile just expanding a bit on that, on physical access, and then speaking a little bit more about emotional access. This is a project that I was personally intimately involved in creating. So on more than one occasion now, I referred to the ambassador and the important role that the ambassador plays in our operating model. These ambassadors are actually all unemployed youth that are from marginalized communities. So what we did here is we took a step back and we said, as a digital bank, I don't think we're going to be employing thousands and thousands of people. It's just the nature of the business, you know. It's a very IP intensive business, and like I mentioned earlier, we digitize a lot of our back-end processes, so we don't have thousands of people in the back office. But equally important, we need that human interface in the front. So when we were thinking about this, we said we also don't have infinite resources, and 750 people for us is a lot. And if we one day want to double it, because we want full coverage all times of day, all times of week, in fact you have to more than double it because there are shift implications, you know, that's a lot. How can we do that in a way that creates opportunity? Now, I mean, all of us know the massive unemployment crisis that we have in the country. When it comes to youth, those numbers are absolutely tragic, particularly if you look at the expanded definition. So what we did here is we said one of the reasons why it's not the only reason, please, but one of the reasons why youth are not getting an opportunity is because employers are looking for the wrong signals. You know? So if it's my first job and you ask me for my CV, what are you going to see in my CV? Like, I haven't worked before. So you should be looking for other attributes. So what we did here is we conceived a way of creating an opportunity for 750 net new jobs in partnership with Arambi. For those that don't know, Arambi is the leading youth employment accelerator in the country. That said, what if we look for different signals from young people and use those as predictors of their ability to perform in a working world? Okay, so what does that mean? Maybe I should give you an example. So these ambassadors are managed by about 52, 55, 56 changes, can't quite remember, area managers. These are experienced people with vehicles and tablets and tracking and training and, you know, whose role it is to supervise and grow these young people. But the mere nature of the outbound model means that they are not continually supervised face to face. So young people, for example, to get on with their work responsibly, need high levels of what we call self-mastery. And we said, how can we test self-mastery? And by the way, they also need high learning potential, right? Because it's their first job, they're going to have to learn quite quickly and so on. Now, how do you test that in rural areas where we have a presence, in peri-rural, in peri-urban areas, without setting up a caravan with expensive psychometrists and 3-hour psychometric tests? So with Harambee, we came up with these psychometric markers. For example, we discovered that voluntary agency becomes a reliable psychometric predictor of self-mastery. So how do you test voluntary agency? Well, there's a few ways. In fact, we tested in a number of ways. The one way we tested is we asked young people to go and get the ID book certified. Now, that might sound trivial. It's not, because often there isn't a police station close to where they live. They have to take one or two taxis to get to the police station. They don't have money. They got to be resourceful, find money, sell something, borrow, whatever the case may be, to get there. But once they've done that and they come to the training program, they produce that proof of that certified copy, and already we can make certain inferences about the levels of self-mastery. And then the last thing we do is we put them on a week-long bridging program. A bridging program is a life skills program infused with technical training. We run it as a seamless delivery, and not everyone makes it through, of course, but those that do are in most times equipped for the job. By the way, we piloted this before we launched the bank, and we measured the performance of these ambassadors. We compared it to those that are experienced hires, and we found that ambassadors that were unemployed, haven't worked before, that came through this process, performed 3 times better than those that than even experienced hires. Okay. So, and then I've got some these are real excerpts from some of the ambassadors. I'm not going to read them all. The committee has the document there, but one has always, like anything in life, you have a mixed bag, but by and large, this has been a very positive intervention. 80%, I'm told, 80% of the ambassadors that have moved on for better work opportunities. So the weird thing is, we've got this unemployment crisis, but the data shows that if somebody has worked for 12 consecutive months, they have an 80% chance of staying employed for the rest of their lives. Maybe that's not quite the case anymore with the unemployment crisis. And maybe that data is a bit aged now, but still, there is a significantly higher chance of remaining employed. And so what we do is we give ambassadors their first opportunity. Okay. So where are we right now? We currently again, this is, you know, these things, they age all very quickly. We probably a hop and a skip away from 1 million customers after having launched the bank in late end of February this year. And what this graph shows is it maps us against other digital banks when they were in the market for the first year of their life cycle. And you can see that we are growing significantly higher than those other digital banks. These digital banks are in Brazil, the UK, and other areas of Europe. But what's also interesting is what we're learning from our customer base. So our proposition has appealed, you know, to people from all walks of life. Okay, you know, there are customers that are, one would consider, affluent, that are doing some stuff with us. They're banking with us, maybe because they like one or two features. They like to save in our Gold Save account, whatever the case may be, or they just want to support a disruptor. We're also finding on the other extreme end that some social grant recipients are signing up with us. You know, so one goes into market with a segmentation, as is always the case, and then you learn as you deploy. But the vast majority of customers earn less than 10,000 rand a month. And again, it comes back to the my sort of opening statements around, you know, what we are here for, what our purpose is. We set out to give ordinary South Africans access to banking, and I think people that have supported us most vehemently are the customers that need it the most. So pleasantly surprised that that's resonating with the message of financial inclusion and our purpose. What we didn't expect, though, is nearly half of our customer base being older than 35. You know, again, it's one of those biases you bring in. You think that you're going to have quite a youthful customer base, and that hasn't been the case. And by the way, this is actually playing out in our account utilization, for example, and how we think about customer utilization going forward, and what we need to still bring to market, and the energy we need to still improve on with our ambassadors to educate customers. So it's playing out there. And then very, very quickly, we are developing. We are doing a bunch of product development, if you like. I mentioned our personal loan and our small business proposition earlier, but let me start with our everyday account. We are what we call rounding out our proposition, you know. So I think what's maybe important for the committee to appreciate is that, you know, we subscribe to this way of work. It's called Agile, for perhaps those that haven't heard of it, you know. Back in the olden days, companies used to work on a piece of software for many months or many years, and then used to take it on, you know, to the top of the cliff and then throw it over, you know, down the waterfall. They used to call the methodology waterfall. Very expensive, very inefficient, takes a long time, very risky, because you learn things in the real world that you didn't expect, and it throws you out completely. So the world of modern software development says you got to get things out there quickly, learn in the real world, and be able to respond. So when we launched the bank, we launched not with every bell and whistle on our product, but customers very quickly told us what was missing. And we've been in this process of continuously developing, bringing new functionality to market. Some of it is more functionality, some of it was, quite frankly, some basic stuff that we were missing and then we had to quickly bring to market. And we are also pursuing some business development work to expand our distribution beyond Pick n Pay and Boxer. One of the things I showed of the picture of the big kiosk that goes inside the stores, we actually have a mobile version of that kiosk now. So it looks, it's in this black ruggedized case that is on wheels. It's almost like a suitcase, like a heavy-duty suitcase. And inside there is our mobile kiosk. I'm actually regretting not having included a picture of that. Now, what it will allow us to do, and we are actually piloting this. It's in very limited destinations. Is that we can take this to high footfall areas, taxi ranks, employers, and so on and so forth, and onboard customers there. It's quite a piece of innovation because, you know, going from something static to something mobile is actually not a simple industrial process because the conditions, the operating conditions, are very different. I've mentioned where we are with personal loans. We have been piloting for the last few months, but in the first quarter of next year, we will be out a lot more prominently in the market. We have accelerated the piece of work on what I spoke to earlier on basket data. So we will be able to link customers profiles back to the to how they are, to their purchasing patterns, if you like. Okay. And then small business, I think I spoke out the fact that we've got this bank account. So right now, it's only for whitelisted customers. We have a small business bank account. It's priced exactly the same like our consumer bank account. But the advantage is a Time Bank customer can have a consumer account and can have a separate small business account in the name of, it's only for sole props at this point. Again, you know, Agile, you start somewhere and you get more complex as you go. They can see two separate profiles on their banking front ends, and they'll have two cards, each one printed in their personal name, the other one printed in their business's name, and we will improve on that as time goes on. So this slide, and sorry it's not portraying well yet, it's obviously a lower res image, but I think it probably does the job at conveying our small business aspirations and where we want to take this. And you know, again, I think it's important just to point out that a lot of this is about strategy and directionally where we want to go. You know, there might be certain things on this chart that, for whatever reason, as we go through the discovery process, we realize that it's perhaps not viable for us to do. But substantially, this is where we're going. So, in the middle of this ecosystem, we have a small business. And when I'm talking about small business here, I'm probably talking about mostly retail service-based small businesses, although conceptually this could apply more broadly. Those businesses interact obviously with their owners. They interact with customers or consumers. They interact with suppliers and they interact with employees. Now, why this chart is quite important, why it's a good mental model, is the way we think about banking small businesses is actually to embed ourselves in the everyday lives of these businesses so that we can start looking for the right signals. Okay? I think banks traditionally look for the wrong signals in small businesses, and that's why the segment is so grossly underserviced. Now, how would we do that? Well, the holy grail, if you like, is to almost try and digitize a lot of these legs by having a proposition that adds meaningful value to the small business's life. For example, the strategy we are pursuing is to have payment acceptance mechanism that will allow small businesses to acquire card transactions, but other forms of transactions as well, as we know are prevalent now in the market. They don't have to do that off the device, of course, if they want to acquire things easily. If they want to acquire card transactions, most times you need a device, not all the time, but you could also do that off an app. That will be backed with this low-cost bank account that I spoke of that we're currently piloting and will make available before the end of the year. Over time, we will bring value-added services on top of that app. So, for example, the ability to order stock electronically and pay for stock is a massive impediment in our communities. Now, some small businesses don't want to do it. So in other words, they prefer cash for obvious reasons. But actually, a lot of businesses, if you've got a bouquet of value, will take it on. So our strategy is to integrate into selected wholesalers and manufacturing principals that will allow small businesses to order goods electronically and to pay for those goods electronically. I mean, I talk sort of in these networks a lot, and the amount of stories I hear about truck drivers and so on being subjects of armed robberies is utterly horrendous. Now, why is that important? Is that there's a clear proposition and benefit for the small business. But additionally, we will be able to see that supply chain information in real time. And we will be able to extend a working capital loan off the back of that. You know, part of the challenge is that, you know, if you go with your stock standard banking, big business process to small businesses, you're typically assessing assets and liabilities, you're typically doing site visits, you know, then they are perceived to be more risky, then you're asking for personal suretyship from the owner. It's very exclusionary in nature, but it's again, you're looking for the wrong signal. We should be looking for the right data signal to say, if I can see that Moores Incorporated has ordered cool drinks for the last 3 months to the tune of 10,000 Rand and has paid for that on time, because we're facilitating that, right? We could offer you a working capital loan and help your cash flow, because cash flow is what's killing small business. We will also be able to see the card acquiring transactions, and for those that are familiar, this merchant cash advance is not a unique offering in the market. There are niche players doing this currently in the market. The banks, for whatever reason, struggle to do it themselves, and they partner actually with non-banks to provide loans. But basically what this is again, if I can see that Ainsley has a point of sale device and he has acquired who has accepted 10,000 Rand, 20,000 Rand, 100,000 Rand in payments from his customers every month, I should be able to advance cash off the back of that. And the way this works is you actually collect off the future card swipes. Okay? So, and again, your risk is mitigated and properly assessed as a lender because you've looked at the historical patterns. Now, because you're collecting off future card swipes, when the small business doesn't make money, you as the lender don't collect. When they make less money, you're collecting less. When they make more money, because many of these, particularly beverage and food and spaza shops, are very seasonal in nature. So when they make more money, then you will collect more. So it's in the lenders' and the small businesses' best interest. And then on the right-hand side, we've just got an estimation of when we want to release additional functionality. Okay. Madam Chair, I might just pause there because I feel like I've been speaking for a long while. So, there's obviously another section on one's opinion of industry challenges and happy to speak about that, but I almost just thought it would be a good idea to pause there. That's sort of an overview of where we are as Steinbank and happy to engage in discussion.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I would like to suggest that we take a 15-minute break, that we then come back, and then I'll open up for a round of questions and answers, and then I think after that we can possibly discuss industry challenges. while I say that, perhaps also maybe think in the meantime about legislative challenges.
Yeah.
That you might have concerns with, because we also are a legislative,
yes,
and regulatory body. So if there's any provincial or national legislation, regulation that you consider an obstacle, we would like to hear about that. Provincial, we have a direct mechanism to be able to deal with that. National is a little bit more difficult, but we do our best to lobby when we believe in a particular topic. With that, we will be back at 10:30, so you have 17 minutes.